Okay. So when we met 2 weeks ago, we started seeing the sugya Daf Gimel Amud Aleph that starts from Daf Gimel Amud Aleph about the propriety, the permissibility of an Oved Kochavim, of a Goy, a Nochri, a Ben Noach, whatever term you want to give him exactly, being Osek Batara. To what extent is he allowed to learn? We saw the Gemara in Sanhedrin quoted this idea, Torah Tzivalonu Moshe Marasha, that the Torah is our unique possession for a non-Jew to learn it. It's an Isser Gezel, it's an Isser Naira Marasa. He's cutting in on our special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when our Gemara talks about Nachri She'osek Bataris Kikohen Gadol, that he's on the status of a Kohen Gadol, that's talking about where he learned Shiva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. So we saw last time where two qualifications that are given, one in a Rishon, one in an Achron, to this prohibition against a non-Jew learning Torah. First, we saw the tshuva from the Rambam, quoted the tshuva from the Rambam, where the Rambam interestingly distinguishes between Christians and Muslims with regard to the heter of teaching Torah to non-Jews. Interestingly, the Rambam writes that one is permitted to teach Torah to Christians since they accept basically the sanctity of Torah Shebiksav, so you can have a conversation with them. In other words, when you quote a pasuk in Yeshaya, they won't dismiss you out of hand. You know, in fact, from our own experience, you know, he'll actually know what Yeshaya is, as opposed to some other Fanunzara, who will say, yeah, I went to yeshiva with him, Yeshaya, right? Yeah, I remember him well, right? So with the Christian, you can have a conversation, and maybe you can point out the ta'uyos, the mistakes that the Christians have made in misinterpreting the Torah, and you have a chance to maybe show him the correct understanding. Maybe that means he'll convert, or if he's not going to convert, at least he's going to stop, hopefully, walking around with this misunderstanding as to what the Torah Shebiksav means. Masha Ein Kein, a Muslim who rejects the Torah Shebiksav and simply believes in what the Quran preaches, so there's no dialogue with him, and Fakert, if you expose him to words of Torah, so he may very well use that against us, against Jews who are not so learned, against recent converts who maybe don't know so much, and you're playing with fire. So Rav Moshe in a tshuva talks about the case that a Reform convert, who lahalacha is not considered Jewish, the Reform convert attends a family seder, and one of the members of the seder is a recent Baal Tshuva, wants to talk and learning at the seder, wants to explain the Masber, the whole Haggadah, and he wants to know what's the propriety of teaching Torah when this non-Jewish relative is at the table. And Rav Moshe writes, as long as your primary audience are Jews, so then it's not a problem. What's the raya? The raya is Tevi, the Eved of Rabban Gamliel. After all, Tevi seems to be a tremendous Talmud Chacham, tremendous Yodea Sefer. Whenever we encounter him in Mishnayos, how did he get to be that way? Must be, as he was in the midst of serving, when he came in and out of the shir, so, he was actually doing more than just serving the tea. He was listening, he was, I don't know if participating, but he was listening and he was following everything that was going on. How is that mutter? Why did Rabban Gamliel throw him out of the room? You see that as long as it's not the primary audience, a non-Jew can be in the room, when Torah studies are going on. Right, so that's one Rishon and one Achron, each of whom in different ways put different qualifications on what seems to be an out-and-out Isser, the way the Gemara presents it, and they indicate that in certain circumstances, the Isser of teaching Torah to non-Jews is not going to apply. I wanted to mention tonight a few more, quote-unquote, exceptions to the rule, or possible exceptions to the rule, which come up in Achronim. There's a Turei Evan in Maseches Chagiga. The Gemara, first of all, Maseches Chagiga, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, has yet another citation which relates to this Isser of teaching Torah to non-Jews. Amar Rab Ami, Ein Mosrin Divrei Torah L'Nochri. one is not allowed to give over words of Torah to a non-Jew. Shenemar lo osa chen l'chol goyim mishpatim bal yadom. Right, famous pasuk we say in Pesukim Zimmer every day. Right, that whereas Magid Devar of Yaakov, Chuk of Mishpat of Yisrael, whereas the Ribbono Shel Olam taught his words and his laws to the Jewish people, well, also Chayin L'chol Goy, God didn't do so to the rest of the nations. Mishpatim Bal Yadom, He didn't teach them, He didn't make them known, didn't make known to them all of the laws of the Torah. Right, so Ein Mosrin Divrei Torah L'Nachri. So ask the Turi Evan, what's the Lashon Ein Mosrin Divrei Torah L'Nachri? We don't give over words of Torah to a non-Jew. I don't know, if you would have asked me to compose that Maimer Chazal, I would have said, Ein Malamdin Torah L'Nachri, right? We don't teach Divrei, Ein Omrin Divrei Torah L'Nachri. What's Ein Mosrin? We don't give over. It's an interesting choice of verb. What exactly is the Lashon Ein Mosrin Divrei Torah L'Nachri? So says the Turi Evan, the only issur to teach Torah to a non-Jew is to do so bekvius, with a sense of regularity. Right, which is the idea of Mosrin. Mosrin means you hand it over to him in such a way that he now gets a handle on the Divrei Torah. In other words, if you set up with a non-Jew that you're going to sit down every Wednesday night and have a learning session in Hilchos Shabbos, right? So that would be Ein Mosrin Divrei Torah L'Nachri. In other words, you know, by the time that you finish this Seder, after a couple of months, you know, you will have given over a tremendous amount of Torah information to this non-Jew. But says the Torah Evan, anything which is be'akroi, anything which is haphazard, which is not kavua, right, but just it comes up and you happen to mention something to him, right, so that's not included in the Isser, and that's why Chazal formulated it in terms of Ein Mosrin Divrei Torah L'Nachri. Ein Mosrin Divrei Torah L'Nachri implies that there's a certain level of kvius or totality, comprehensiveness, you know, that's involved in giving over the words of Torah to the non-Jew. Something which, you know, he asks you a question, you give him an answer, that's not included in the Isser. My Raya, says the Turi Evan, besides the Lashon in the Gemara and Chagiga, is all the cases throughout Shas and Midrashim where you find non-Jews come up to the Rabbanon and they ask them questions about Yiddishkeit, and the Rabbanon answer. Right? I mean, you find stories with Minim, you know, so Minim, maybe it's a Jew, maybe it's not a Jew, but I mean, but you find stories where you have, Romans, where, I mean, clearly, I'm sorry? Rebbe and Antoninus, there it's even more complicated because it says that Antoninus was actually learning by Rebbe. Take Antoninus out of it for a minute. Turnus Rufus and Rebbe Akiva. Right? So we often find, you know, these kind of dialogues, conversations going on.
Were some of those Pikuach Nefesh?
Right, so in some cases you can say, you know, he had to answer, there was no... But, you know, we find other examples as well. You have Midrashim that talk about, you know, certain matrons, Hahimatronisa, you know, that would go over to this town or this Amora and, you know, ask them some kind of question regarding Yiddishkeit. In other words, if you, I don't know how many instances there are, but if you go through, I mean, you run into enough examples of this that you can't just dismiss them all as, oh, they had no choice, oh, it was Pikuach Nefesh. Why Taka were they allowed to answer? Right? So the answer seems to lie with this to Rei Evan. The Rabbanim in all these cases were allowed to answer because it's not called Mesiras Divrei Torah L'Nachri. It's not that you're giving over words of Torah to a Nachri. He asked you a question, you gave him an answer. Fakert, if you would have not given him an answer, you would have brushed him off and said, I can't talk to you about things like that. Right? So, it would have not, raised the level of respect, certainly, that the non-Jews would have for Torah and its practitioners. Right? So, you know, he wants to know a particular thing. Okay, so you answer that particular thing, and that's it. As long as it's Ba'akroi and not the Kriyas, it's not a violation.
It's the whole Vikuach.
Right, so the Vikuach with the Ramban, so you could tie in again, you know, that the Jews didn't have a choice. Right, all the Vikuchim that took place in the Middle Ages. And look, you know, the Vikuach, you know, it's... There were two choices for the Vikuach, right? Either they win or we lose. Right? Those were the two potential outcomes, right? I mean, Taka the Ramban won the Vikuach, he got a bag of gold from King James, right? And then they chucked him out of Spain. You know, he had to leave Svarad, you know, because he won the Vikuach. You can imagine if he would have lost the Vikuach, right? But he won the Vikuach and they sent him on his way to Eretz Yisrael. So there, again, I don't know. I mean, there you can kind of, like Danny says, okay, look, I don't know if it's Vikuach Nefesh Mamish, but maybe it's even Hasalas Kol Yisrael. I mean, you know, you don't know what the situation was, if they refused to participate in the Vikuach. But again, in the Midrashim, you know, you find enough examples where, you know, questions are being asked of the Rabbanon in circumstances which don't seem to necessarily be, you know, circumstances of Pikuach Nefesh. I think Lemaisa, this heter of the Turi Evan is probably the application of this halacha, or the application of a heter in this halacha that comes up most frequently. I mean, if a person has any interaction whatsoever with non-Jews, you know, especially if you're the token frum Jew at work or whatever it happens to be, sooner or later they're going to ask you some kind of question about Yiddishkeit. It's almost inevitable that they're going to. B'didi hava uvda. I was on the train yesterday, and I happen to work in a fairly Jewish environment. You know, I don't really have too many I have a few non-Jewish coworkers, you know, but not too many. So b'didi hava uvda. Yesterday I was on the subway, and was sitting, I think, at 34th Street Station. And a fellow comes over to me, an African-American fellow, and he says, excuse me, do you know any good books about the history of Hasidim? The truth is, I had to think about it. I didn't really know any good books about the history of, I mean, you know, certainly not for a general audience. I mean, you know, I mean, the few books that were written for a general audience about the history of Hasidim were not particularly sympathetic to the Hasidim, you know, so I'm not sure if those are the sort of things I would want to recommend. So finally, I figured, you know, I'll go with the strength. I say, you know, I think if you Wikipedia Hasidim, you'll probably come up with a good bibliography, you know, at the end, you know, at the end of the entry.
If you want,
if you go on the computer and you go to, you know, the online encyclopedia, which you have on the computer. Yeah, Google it or something like that. But I'm sure in the article on Hasidim, they probably have a bibliography at the end. So what he did with it, I don't know. But maybe in a year he'll come back with you know, a lan kapota, you know, and pious, and, you know, the whole thing. Okay, could be. But I mean, these things come up all the time.
But is it possible to say in the Ramban Shita that he holds also on this concept of being Moser instead of Bakrai? Or is it, you know, one word to a Muslim is already an issur for him?
Right, so for the Rambam, I don't think the Rambam would draw that distinction, but because the Rambam's coming from a very different perspective. As we pointed out last time, whereas the simple pshat in the Gemara seems to be that you can't teach Torah to non-Jews, why? Because somehow he's interfering in our special relationship with God. The Rambam, I think, takes a very different understanding of the Isser. The Rambam holds that the Isser is you're not allowed to provide them with ammunition. And Christians are not going to use this as ammunition, Muslims will, right? So if I really hold that any Dvar Torah, which I say over to a Muslim, is going to serve as ammunition, so then L'chara, you know, Echara Mamid, Echara Marba, Echara Mamid, is going to be a problem. Now, I guess, you know, in theory, the Rambam might hold that if you're in a circumstance where, you know, you perceive that the Muslim might be friendly, and you're not really teaching him Torah Shebiksav, but, you know, the Muslim wants to know certain things, you know, because maybe he thinks he's going to be helpful to the Jews in some way or another, right? I mean, Moshe Lamad Dover Doma, you know, you have a Shabbos Goy, right? So let's say in Eretz Yisrael where the right, he needs to know, you know, what he can do and what he's not allowed to do. So there, you know, you're sharing Torah with him, not in the sense of being moser to a non-Jew, but you're giving him whatever he needs to know in order to help you out of these circumstances. I would suspect that if the Rambam felt, you know, that it wasn't going to be used as ammunition, he would be okay with that as well. But again, the distinction wouldn't be so much Ba'akroi versus Bekvias. It would be more, is this going to be potentially harmful or not necessarily harmful?
According to Rambam, you know, in terms of the Shiloh that was asked of Marisha about reforms you had to say there.
Reform convert at the Seder.
Hmm?
Reform convert at the Seder.
Reformed convert.
Convert.
A reformed convert.
Right. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's not really Jewish.
Right.
Right. So he has to do with a Christian.
Or a non-Jew.
Oh, I
right.
see. I see. Because so reformed convert. I see.
Right. Okay. So that's the Turiyev, and again, it's. I think the practice is to be maker like the Turiyev and to assume that the Turiyev is la halacha, simply because it's very hard to imagine how one would ever deal with these issues without being maker like the Turiyev. And I mean, a coworker asks you, you know, so why are you walking around with this thing on your head? Very hard to tell him.
I can't tell you.
Right?
The Sikh religion does not share any information about its practices, and it's done behind closed doors. So they don't tell you anything. Somehow, I don't know how people have found out what they do. Maybe someone violated the laws and told the rest of us. But they go around, they don't share anything. So that's not that hard if you really believe, I'm sorry, I can't discuss it.
It's possible. Anything's possible. But I don't know that would win us friends if we did it. You know, if we, I mean, again, okay, so maybe if we're mechuyev to do it, we're mechuyev to suffer the consequences, but certainly minhag ha'olam seems to be that, you know, we don't seek out to try to explain Judaism to the widest possible audience, but to the extent to which people may ask questions, you know, the tendency is to try to share, you know, at least some basic information. Again, I assume that the, you know, people assume that the Turi Evan is considered to be authoritative lahalacha. Well, damash etoshiv lapikaris, though, as the apikaris is mstama yid, right, in that particular case. Okay, so we mentioned the Turi Evan. Another sad lahokel in certain circumstances is raised by the Mariv Chayis, and the Mariv Chayis makes reference to a Gemara in the 7th parak of Sota, which we didn't see last year. We spoke about the Birkas Kohanim aspect of the 7th parak of Sota, but earlier in the 7th parak of Sota, the Gemara there talks about the Jews coming into Eretz Yisrael, setting up 12 stones in the vicinity of Har Grizim and Har Eval, and writing Kol HaTorah Kula in 70 different, or I shouldn't say Kol HaTorah Kula, many Rishonim hold that they wrote Kol HaTorah Kula. They certainly wrote Torah, right? Maybe it was the Aseres HaDibros according to some Rishonim, maybe it was a condensed version of the Torah, but certainly they wrote some aspect of Torah on all 12 stones, B'Shivim Loshon, in 70 languages. And the Gemara there at Sota makes it clear that the expectation was, why did they write it in 70 languages? Because they were hoping that the non-Jews would come and they would read the Torah, which was written in 70 languages, and perhaps they would give up their Avodah Zarah, and if not embrace Torah as converts, at least recognize the truth of Torah and the truth of the relationship that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with the Jewish people. So, in fact, the Maritz Chayus, so how were they allowed to do that? Ein Mosrin Devar Torah LeNochri. LaAsach Ein L'Chol Goyim Mishpatim Bal Yadom.
It's a mitzvah.
Right?
It's a mitzvah.
Okay, so how does that work? In other words, how can you have a mitzvah that goes against a limud that comes from the Torah itself. Torah Sivalano Moshe Marasha Kihilas Yaakov. In other words, if this iser to give over Divrei Torah to non-Jews is based on a pasuk, which the Gemara quotes, you know, Marasha Kihilas Yaakov, how could you have that? Right? How can you have a tzivui which in a different context would be an aveira? Okay, so maybe you could say there are examples of that. So let's say Yibum L'Moshe. Right? And that's what Chazal say. Under normal circumstances, if the union had produced a child, it would be totally usher to marry the brother-in-law, right? But the same Torah that says that under normal circumstances you can't marry the brother-in-law. So under these circumstances where there's where the brother died childless, So it becomes a mitzvah of you. Okay, so maybe you can say like that. But it seems odd. It seems odd that one of the things that the Jewish people would be commanded when coming into Eretz Yisrael would be to do something which under normal circumstances we would never want to do. We want to stay away from. So says the Maritz Chayis, so it must be that there's a distinction between Torah Shebiksav and Torah Shebaalpeh. Why are you not allowed to teach Torah to non-Jews? That's Torah Shebaalpeh. What was written down on the stones when the Jews came into Eretz Yisrael? At most, it was Torah Shebiksav. Again, the Rishonim argue as to whether it was Kala Torah Kula or just some excerpt of Torah Kala Torah Kula, right? In other words, Aseres Adibris or the like. But certainly, it wasn't more than the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. In other words, at most, it was the entirety of the Chumash or the Torah Shebiksav, right? Why would there be such a distinction? Well, the Gemara in Gittin writes that it was on the basis of the Torah Shebaal Peh that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made his bris with the Jewish people. Ki al pi advarim ha'ele karati bris itcha v'yes Yisrael. The Ribbono Shel Olam says that it was al pi advarim ha'ele, which the Gemara teaches, based on these things which are Baal Peh, which are oral, that's what prompted HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or what, convinced HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make the bris, to make the covenant between himself and the Jewish people. So in other words, just to go back to the explanation we gave originally, if learning Torah, if a non-Jew learning Torah is encroaching on the special relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that special relationship exists primarily through the Torah Shebaal Peh, but in a sense the Torah Shebiksav was meant for a broader audience, right? In other words,
But if you're going to, let's say, teach someone Ayin Tachas Ayin, are you not supposed to teach him that's just monetary value because therefore you're over on Torah Shebaal Peh? Or are you going to teach him to literally gouge out each other's eyes because that's what the Torah says? How can you teach, at least why, if you can teach Torah Biksav without Torah Shebaal Peh, why are we bothering with all this?
Right, 100%. So the question is, and it's a great question, what's considered Torah Shebiksav, what's considered Torah Shebaal Peh? I could say a svara, I don't know.
How do they exist independent of it?
Right, true. Right. I mean, especially given, you look at all of the Mefarshim who wrote in the 19th century on Chumash, Rav Shamshon Farel Hirsch, the Malbim, Haksav, HaKabbalah, the Torah Tmima, the Netziv. I mean, a large part of what all of them tried to do was to show that the Torah Shebiksav and the Torah Shebaal Peh are intertwined. In other words, that it's almost impossible to understand this Pasuk in Chumash without the Torah Shebaal Peh. So I would say the following, and again, it's Svaras Atzmi, it's not the Maritz Chayas, so again, take it for what it's worth. There are different aspects of Torah Shebaal Peh. Some aspects of Torah Shebaal Peh are interpretive, right? Some aspects of Torah Shebaal Peh add on or amplify what's in the Torah Shebiksav, right? So, I mean, to take a good example, Ayin Tachas Ayin. So now that we believe that if you gouge out somebody's eye in response to him gouging out, somebody else's eye, that's not, that's the written interpretation of Torah. That's just wrong. That's the wrong interpretation of Torah. In that case, the literal pshat doesn't have any meaning halachically, right? Or even not even halachically. In other words, that's not what we believe the Torah means. The Torah Shebaal Peh, in that case, tells us that the only proper interpretation of Ayin Tachas Ayin is Mama. Ukshartam la'os al yodecha v'hoyil totafos bein einecha. Right? So we believe that it's not correct to say that just means kind of metaphorically you should be so connected to Torah that it's as if it was on your arm and as if it was, placed between your eyes. No, we believe that refers to a specific mitzvah called tefillin, right? But, okay, so in other words, when you teach, if one were to teach Torah to a non-Jew, it would be appropriate, I'm suggesting, I'm not sure if it's true, it would be appropriate, according to the Maritz Chayis, to say that, okay, we can learn together this pasuk, And you should know that our, you know, our interpretation of what that means, you know, the Masorah as to what that means, is that we wear this thing called tefillin. But once you get into things which amplify the Torah to Shibuk Saf, so in other words, it's not just enough that we wear tefillin, but you know what? Tefillin is supposed to be black. Tefillin is supposed to be square. There's something called Shechita, and it has various halachas that pertain to it. Right? That already is true Torah Shabbat Al-Peh, because it's not an interpretation of what's in the Chumash. It's not telling us, read the Psukim this way, as opposed to that way. It's telling us additional information, which if you just read the Chumash straight, you would have no clue about whatsoever.
Is
Torah Shabbat Al-Peh. Right, so I would suggest, again, I don't know if it's correct, but I think it's, there's a certain svara to it. I would suggest that the Maariv Chayis would include, you know, just saying pshat in the psukim in accordance with Chazal, he would lump that together with Torah Shebiksav. In other words, it's hard to imagine that we would be mechuyev to teach the non-Jew a wrong pshat in the Torah Shebiksav, you know, just to go with pshat as opposed to the halachic interpretation, right, where it's relevant. But, you know, where there are halachas, halacha l'moshe m'sinai, or the like, or, you know, different kinds of drushas, which, you know, you don't need to, for basic understanding, right? No, things like that, I think he would define as being Torah Shabbat Al-Peh.
When the Canaanim read what was on the stones, they wouldn't know any of this.
Right, so you're saying, so in other words, maybe it's just literally. A lot of it depends, though, however, how they translated it. Right? In other words, take a look at L'mashal Targum Onkelos. Right? So, I think on the Pasuk, Shatam La'os HaGedecha V'ahilu T'tafos V'neinecha, he teaches, if I'm not mistaken, I think he teaches T'tafos as Tefillin. Right? I don't think, for the first part of the Pasuk, I don't think he uses the word Tefillin, but for T'tafos, I think he teaches it as Tefillin.
That much of Torah in Al-Peh would be okay, then.
Right, so in other words, when they put it in Shivim Lashon, perhaps they made the kind of, a translation could be an interpretation as well. So perhaps, again, I don't, you know, let's say Ayin Tachas Ayin as an example. So I think Targum Onkelos just says Eina Chalaf Eina. I think he just, you know, translates it literally, an eye instead of an eye. But you could imagine that someone could translate it, the value of an eye instead of an eye. Right? I mean, it's not a very difficult translation, and perhaps when they wrote a Beshivim Lashon, very simple interpretive things such as that, perhaps they actually did translate like that.
Just to understand the distinction, is that to say then, let's say, keeping Onkelos as the example, so there are times where he just translates Ayin Tachas Ayin literally, even though that's not pshat.
Right.
There are times, like by Tefillin, where he translates Totafos as Tefillin.
Right.
And that means that's the translation of it. It's,
right.
In this distinction, that's still Torah. It's still
Torah Shabbat. Right.
And then sometimes he'll say a pshat in a pasuk.
Rarely.
Well, like this, I think in last week's parasha where it said that, or 2 weeks ago, where it said that why the brothers had to eat separate from the Egyptians.
Right.
The Balakriya will remember the pasuk, and I think even Rashi.
Because they eat the god of the Egyptians.
That would be a Torah Sheb Baal Peh that snuck into Onkelos.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Although you might even make the argument that maybe even that is Torah Shebiksav, to the extent to which, because I think what he's doing, that particular pasuk, ki soeva hi lemitzrayim, that's the pasuk. So the one pshat in that pasuk is ki soeva hi lemitzrayim, because the Mitzrim consider it objectionable to eat with the Jews. But I think the way Onkelos is teaching it, he's saying toeva is a reference to the avodah zarah. In other words, they won't eat with the Jews. Because to'eva hi lemitzrayim, that which the Jews eat is the to'eva, you know, a euphemism for the God, you know, the Eliel, the Avodah Zarah, you know, of the of the Egyptians. And as I think he's translating over there, I don't think he's putting in additional material. Where the Unkelus oftentimes puts in additional interpretive material is by brachos. You know, it's whenever you find, let's say, the Berachos Yaakov, or the you know, the brachos of Bilam, or you know, any of these sort of things. You know, the Unkelus goes to town.
I
mean, he's big. You know, yeah. I mean, he talks a lot. You know, and he gives his own pshatim over there. So again, I don't know what that category that falls into, but you know, the point I'm making in general is that there may be a slightly wider category of Torah Shebiksav than simply the very literal translation of the terms. I think to a certain extent, what we might call Torah Sheba'al Peh might be Torah Shebiksav for the purposes of the Maariv Chayes, as I'm suggesting. Right, because again, it's hard to imagine that you'd be mechuyev to teach them something which is wrong, which is not halachically
pshat. Dangerous.
Dangerous, right? Yeah, I ain't tachasayin, and I'll move out of the way now. but again, that's svaras atzmi. I don't know if the Maariv Chayes would agree to that. Okay, so that's the Maariv Chayes. One more knach, so to speak, that you find in Achronim with regard to. You know, with regard to exceptions to the rule to teaching a non-Jew Torah, which is also very nogeya lemaisa, is when it comes to gerim. Right? Are you allowed to teach a ger Torah so that when he comes out of the mikveh, he should have at least some idea
of what to do,
of what it is that he's supposed to be doing? I mean, it's true. Oh, so the Marsha in Shabbos, in Masechet Shabbos, is the source for the heter over here, and he quotes the story from Hillel. What's the story from Hillel? Not the famous story from Hillel, right? The famous story from Hillel is where the Nachri comes to him, Gairani, you know, teach me in Kol HaTorah Kula while stealing our regal achas, and Hillel says, Daloch soni lechaver cholo savid, whatever is hateful to you, don't do it to your friend. Idoch perusha, all the rest of it is an interpretation. Zil gemar, you know, just go and learn it. Okay, good. The next Gemara talks about how a non-Jew comes before Hillel Azok and he says, "Gareni amanashe yekoin gadol. I want you to convert me, and my condition for converting is I should go to the head of the class, right? And I want to convert and become a kohen gadol immediately on conversion. You know, maybe he was maybe he was an easygoing guy. You know, I say I'll wait 6 months, you know, before I step into the position. But basically, my tnai, my condition for conversion, is I want to become a Kohen Gadol. So, the way the Rasha understands the story, Hillel says, okay, not a problem, let's just sit down and learn first, before we can, you know, finalize the conversion. They go through Beishus, they go through Shmos, they go through Vayikra, they get up to the beginning of Bamidbar, so it says, they're learning, it says, Vazor akar ev yumos, right? And all of a sudden, the light bulb goes off over the potential ger's head, and he says, "Oh, so you're saying even a Jew from birth, who's not a kohen, who does the avoda, is going to be chayiv misa? So that would seem to exclude me from ever being a kohen gadol, wouldn't it now?" And Hillel Zokin, you know, he scratches his head. He says, "Yeah, you know, I
figured it out yourself.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's a good shot over there. Yeah, taka." And the fellow says, "Well, you know, I've been learning so much, and I see that's not possible, but I still want to convert." And the story ends happily ever after. You know, he's Megayer, and you know, he gives up any pretensions of ever becoming the Kohen Gadol. So, Vector Marshal. So how is Hillel Zokin able to learn everything that he learned with him? It's also to teach Torah to a non-Jew. Elamai, so says the Rasha, from this Gemara you see, this is the Makar, from this Gemara you see that to teach Torah to somebody as part of the process of Gir is not considered to be a violation of Magid Devar of Yaakov, of Torah Sival and Moshe Marasha Kilas Yaakov. Why? Well, so again, I mean, it goes back to the reasons which we brought before. Certainly, according to the Rambam, you can understand full well why gear would be an exception. I mean, the reason you're not allowed to teach Torah to an non-Jew, according to the Rambam, is they shouldn't use it as ammunition against us, right? But, you know, here clearly, again, assuming he's a sincere gear, he doesn't want to use it as ammunition against us, he wants to use it to join us. And even according to what we said, you know, maybe the more conventional pshat, that for a non-Jew to learn Torah is cutting in onto the relationship, the special relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. But he's practicing to be, revving up to be a member of the club.
Can you say Svara, just like he knows he needs to know it because he needs to know what to do, just like you're allowed to teach Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach to a guy. It's not pshat that they're in the club for those seven mitzvahs. No, this is how they have to live. They have to teach them because they have to know it. I don't know if teaching Torah to a woman is in the same category, but there's certain things that they have to know.
Whatever she has to know.
So
Gare also
has to know. Otherwise, he's going to be chayav misa the first day out of the shoot. That's no way for a Jewish person, right? So you have to teach him the whole Torah because he has to know the whole Torah. And it's not that, on day one he's going to have to put on tefillin, so let me teach him, the halachos of tefillin, and he's going to convert on a Tuesday, so he doesn't have to know about Kriyas HaTorah until Thursday, so we'll wait until afterwards. No, the Shah is that he has to know the whole Torah, and that's why we're teaching it to him. And just anyone who would need to know gets to learn whatever they need to know. So for a guy it's seven mitzvahs, for a woman it's whatever our mitzvahs are, for a Jew or someone who's about to become a Jew, it's called Torah Kulah.
It's called Torah Kulah because even though he doesn't need it to know right now, practically speaking, he's going to be Magayer, the whole thing's going to fall him at once, and it's not shaykh for him to do it.
Yeah, by the way, he has a mitzvah that he has to learn the whole Torah.
Right, at that point, Now, let me just go back to David because I know where you had a point before.
I just wanted to ask you, why didn't Hillel... aren't you supposed to discourage somebody at the beginning? So if the guy came to Hillel and said, teach me how not to become a Kohen Gadol, so that would be a good chance for him to say, guess what, you can't become a Kohen Gadol.
Right, so that's an excellent question. Tysus over there asked the question. Because after all, somebody comes with ulterior motives, forget about discouraging them. Under most circumstances, we're not supposed to accept them if they come with ulterior motives, right? Chazal say that during the time of David and Shlomo, they didn't accept Gerim because the Malchus Yisrael was at its apex. Joining the Jewish people at that time was not about accepting the Jewish religion. It was joining the in club. We were on top. So everyone wanted to join us. So Tysus writes over there that he was able to discern that ultimately the Ger was l'shem Shamayim. In other words. This wasn't, and you see, that's what the end of the story ended up. In other words, his obsession with becoming a Kohen Gadol was this already I'm reading into Tosfos, so take it with a grain of salt. But in other words, why do you want to become a Kohen Gadol? So you could say, well, he wanted the glory, right? He wanted to walk. What's that? Manas Kahuna, he wanted to be able to walk around with a big sign, I am a Kohen Gadol. So clearly that would have been totally Shalol L'Shem Shamayim, and Hillel would have brushed away such a person. Tosfos writes that Hillel saw the Ger was L'Shem Shamayim. What does that mean? He wanted to become a Kohen Gadol because he wanted to be on the highest Madrega of Kedusha that he could possibly reach. In other words, not that I want to be the big kahuna, not that I want to, that is what he wanted to do, right? Not that I want to be, the most chosh of a guy around, right? I want to achieve the highest levels of ruchnius that I could possibly achieve. I mean, Haraya, our Gemara, when talking about the tremendous level that a Nachri can achieve, when learning the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach says, Harehu Kekohen Gadol. Now, Kohen Gadol is synonymous with the top level of ruchnius that a person can get to. So when he says Gareni Amanasha Eya Kohen Gadol, he meant it in a sincere sense. Okay, he was misguided, but once you pointed out his misunderstanding to him, he still wanted to embrace Yiddishkeit. So Hillel Zaken was able to see that, and he saw that this was a motive which was a little bit off, but the guy was basically good and would stick with it even when you peeled away this this mistaken motive.
Because maybe this potential ger heard the term Amleches Kayin and Goy Kaddish.
Right.
I'm not a Kayin, you're not a Kayin, right?
He had learned Shmos, right? Yeah. Halfway through the process, he did make it through Shmos, right?
Right.
Like at the beginning of our
Mitzvah. We're a priestly nation, so maybe he heard that from before, and the Chatzach in his Kaf, Amleches Kayin, I want to be the Kayin Gadol, because we are, Kohanim is specifically a certain group. He thought that the whole nation said, oh, good, I want to be the biggest one. Like you said, the big kahuna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Enochinami. Yeah. So Al-Kaparah, so the Maharsha learns that from that Gemara. So we see Halacha L'Maisa, and we you know, b'derech klal, this is what is followed. The Maharshal says, we see from this Gemara halacha l'maisa, that when a ger comes to be megayir, we don't hold anything back. In other words, in terms of his learning, anything that, I mean, we don't sit down with the ger and teach him kodshim, you know, but, you know, certainly anything that he's
going to... Unless gonna, he's going to be a kohen gadol.
Right, I guess. Right, but anything that he's going to need to know practically for himself after the gear, you know, again, it's hard to imagine the guy's going to be megayir on a Tuesday. I mean, what's going to happen that first Shabbos? If he never opened the book on Hilchos Shabbos before, how's he going to manage? It's hard enough for people who are Jewish from birth, you know, to manage with all of Hilchos Shabbos. Well, what's the guy going to do, you know, if it's a shock to him that you're not allowed to turn on a light on Shabbos, you know?
Just thinking about the Maisa, I mean, it wasn't Suffolk in Hillel's mind. The time that the guy came to say, I want to be a Kohen Gadol. It's okay, we'll sit and learn. And let's say you get there to that plus and say, oh, why? I thought, how can we become a kind of, you know, I don't want any part of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying, because the Rav said before, because he saw the sincerity that maybe if he would know, he would. But Lamaise, at that time, Hill didn't know that he was going to go to go for it. So Lamaise, Hill still didn't have a right to teach him. Because Lamaise is a Suffolk at the time that he started.
No,
he should think to himself, wait a minute, maybe when we get there, maybe he's going to say, oh, I don't want this. I want to become a kind of.
That's a good Ha'ara, but I would turn it from Akashan to Ha'ara. In other words, the Maharshal is saying something even stronger. By definition, any gear, not just this gear. I mean, it's shayich that you could teach a gear Torah for a year in preparation for the gear, and you know, the guy walks into the mikveh, and you ask him as he's standing there in the mikveh, you know, before he's about to dunk his head under, "Nu, do you want to do this?" He says, "You know, I've been thinking about it. Actually, get me the towel. I'm coming right out." You know, right? You know, right. I mean, and he has every right to do that. I mean, until he dunks his head under the water and his makabel all Torah mitzvahs, he can stop at the very end. In fact, you know, he's told at that point in the process, you know, if you want to turn back now, it's not too late. You can get out of the water right now. And Shalom Al Yisrael, just when we say Shalom Al Yisrael, won't mean you, right? But, you know, everything is, you know, it's still up in the air until the last moment. Right, but, you know, well, I don't know if you pay for the mikveh if you're not mitayer in the mikveh. No, it's the tevil in the mikveh, right? If it doesn't go under, you know, I don't know if you... Okay, so mekanklerin, but anyway, so that's true of any gear. Any gear is going to be a suffix. I mean, you know, even if the guy comes to you and says, "I absolutely want to convert to Yiddishkeit," you know, you don't know what's going to be in the end of the day.
We want to teach him all that Torah because we want to see if he's really true. No, is that the reason why we teach him all
okay.
that Torah? Because we want to see, is it really sincere? By giving him the whole Torah that he has to learn, you know, you say, "Well, I can't do this. I can't do that. I got to do this. I got to do that." And that is not me. Is that a reason why we do this with the guy?
Well, dear. It could be. I mean, the halacha is modin on some mitzvahs chalos and mitzvahs chamuros. In other words, before he's megayah, we give him a smattering, a smorgasbord of what it is that Torah is all about. Some of the harder mitzvahs, some of the softer mitzvahs, right? But what you see, I mean, the Maharshal is bringing out a chiddush that not only are you allowed to teach Torah to a ger, you're allowed to teach Torah to a ger despite a potential ger. Despite the fact that he may not be Megayir in the end. Which again is especially outstanding, you know, especially something you see especially in this case with Hillel and the Ger, because there was such a, you know, there was this condition that he threw into it. But the truth is any Ger, any potential Ger, you never know till it's over that he's actually going to finish the Ger properly.
Why did, when crucial in my point of the Torah to the
almost all.
What did he do? He gave him one which he knew they couldn't accept. Right? Here is a case where this potential gear says, "I want to become Kohen Gadol." Why'd you tell him that you can't do this? You want to be Kohen Gadol? It's not for you, right initially, instead of going through everything else.
Yeah, so that's, again, I think that goes back to the Taisus. Hillel HaZaken was able to discern that the guy was sincere.
But then you just find out if he's sincere very easily. Just tell me you can't do this. I mean, if this is, you know, this is the offer you want, then we can't make it through the offer. If you want everything else and this as well, you
Isn't it more to what short hill is
beyond
patience?
No patience, no patience. I mean, the guy wants something which you can't give him.
Right. So again, I think what I said before in Tosis, I think helps us understand the situation. The guy comes, he says, I want to be a Kohen Gadol. Again, not because he wants to show off, but he says, I want to reach the highest Madrigas of Ruchnis I possibly can.
So,
the answer would, at that stage, the answer would be interpreted by this potential Ger as, you can't be all that ruchni when you come to our religion. In other words, that's how it would sound to him. He could, Hillel would only be successful in getting across that point once the guy was exposed to some Torah learning, and Hillel thought it was a worthwhile investment to do that, because in the end of the day, the guy would be a Geret Tzedek.
Baal Teshuva would come, there's nothing about the other, he says, you know, I'm willing to come aboard, and the condition, I become Kohen Gadol. Can you tell him, promise you anything in the world about a kid that this is out of reach? Or you can tell him, keep on learning and learning and telling him that maybe it's, if you learn enough, you become a Kohen Gadol. Only because your father was.
Right. Right. So I would do something in the middle, I mean, practically speaking. On the one hand, you can't mislead him.
Right.
And I think certainly in the case of the Gemara, Hillel never tells the guy, oh, okay, so sign up here and you'll become a Kohen Gadol. In other words, okay, let's start learning. Right,
but
and he doesn't.
But not telling him anything, you're leading him astray as
right,
well.
In a sense.
And when I think he's supposed to, you know, try to push him away rather than try to join you, no matter how valuable he might be.
Mm-hmm. Right, but let me just go back to Baal Teshuva for a minute. If you sense that something you're going to say to the Baal Teshuva is going to drive him away altogether, I would say Aloch Lemaisa, you certainly shouldn't tell him that. In other words, you know, the guy comes and he says, you know, I'm willing to come to your weekly Torah class, but don't even talk to me about keeping Shabbos. Okay, I won't talk to you about keeping Shabbos. Just come Wednesday nights, and you'll learn once a week, you know. And we'll worry about the other stuff when we get there. Apparently, again, Hillel saw that this guy was so sincere. Perhaps he made some initial attempts to push him away, but you know, apparently he saw that he was so sincere that he thought it was worthwhile to undergo the process.
Tell him first. I mean, it's hard to understand.
It's hard to understand. Kasha Hill, the other guy, he knew what to tell that guy. He must have been able to read these people somehow.
You see, the Moshul Shammai Hillel. Shammai was very, very captain. Very, right. Get out of here, you know?
Right.
And Hillel was very patient. Moshul trying to show the godliness of Hillel.
Right, right.
Patience.
Right, no, so that's clearly what the Gemara is doing, but it's like, you also have to understand the halachas that, you know, that are coming out of that. Yeah.
According to the Rambam, what would you do with a Muslim that came to you and wanted to convert? If he doesn't convert, if he doesn't accept it, he might take what you taught him and go back and use it again.
Yeah, so I suspect the Rambam would say, try to get a sense of how sincere he really is. And I find it hard to imagine the Rambam would say, oh, you can't accept any Muslim converts to Judaism. Haraya. One of the famous tshuvas of the Rambam is actually to a Muslim convert to Judaism whose name was Ovadia, where in that tshuva he famously lays out his shita that Islam is not considered to be avodah zarah. Right? I mean, again, he's writing to a guy who converted to Judaism, a former Muslim who converted to Judaism, but you know, he doesn't throw in anything there about, oh, by the way, how is it that you were allowed to convert in the first place? But it doesn't make any such statements. So I guess the Rambam would say, look, you have to really get a sense of how sincere the person is. If you really think the person is likely to use the Torah you teach them as ammunition, you know, so then you certainly shouldn't teach them. But if you get the sense that there's a certain sincerity, so then, you know, you can train them, al-manasli, you know, to be
Megayah. But once you start teaching him, give him an idea of, let him get an idea of whether he wants to become a Jew, really wants to become a Jew or not, and then he uses that information to decide, I don't want to become a Jew, then he can really regress into his old way of thinking and want to use that information against us.
Right, in Ochinami.
It's a little bit of a dangerous thing.
Yeah, in Ochinami. In Ochinami, I mean, it's going to have to be a judgment call at the end of the day. It's interesting to note that, I mean, as much as this Marsha is accepted halacha lemaisa, I think, by everybody today. I mean, I don't think there's anybody responsible who's Megayer people today without setting up a curriculum for them where they learn a tremendous amount. I mean, the Geirim who know what they're doing oftentimes can put Jews from birth to shame. And I'm talking about before they're Megaya, right? In other words, forget about after they're Megaya, but even before they're Megaya, you know, oftentimes they know various halachas and the like, you know, where Jews are put to shame. I met recently with someone who was about to convert to Judaism, and I said, "Are you familiar with the Yud Gimel Ikrim of the Rambam?" And she rattled them off. Okay, I guess you're familiar, right? We won't take a poll as to how many people are able to do that, but you know, it's certainly not something that that even people within the Frum Machane are necessarily able to do. But with all of that, with all of the fact that the Mashal is accepted, I think universally halacha lemaisa, not all achronim agreed with the Mashal. Reb Akiva Eger, you know, one of the gedolei achronim, and someone not from such a long time ago, relatively speaking, you know, he passed away in the early 1800s. Reb Akiva Eger writes in a tshuva, he doesn't understand how you can teach a ger anything, or a potential ger anything, before they're ready to megayah. Where'd you come up with this heter, you know, to be able to teach a non-Jew Torah after he converts? So then you'll teach him what he needs to know. I mean, you'll tell him a little bit beforehand, mixes kalos and mixes chamuros. But again, mixes kalos and mixes chamuros is something you can do in half an hour. You know, you sit him down, you give him a smattering of what the Jewish lifestyle is all about, what Jewish observance is all about. Vizehu, you know, more than that, he's basically mekabel the same way that the Jews were mekabel the Torah. Nasa v'nishma, Rabbi, whatever you tell me, I'll do after I'm a gaya.
Is it possible to say that he's contemplating a situation where a guy comes learns on his own? He's a guy who somehow gets interested and figures things out on his own, and then he comes and he says, "I want to be a gaya," and then you can, you know, you test him just to make sure. But you didn't teach him anything. He came to it on his own. In other words, and that fits in with we don't encourage and we try to push people away. But the guy, what can I do? The guy, you know, snuck into the basement here, and he learned for 20 years, and now he's ready.
It's an interesting chiluk, but the Rebbe Akiva Eger himself, I mean, he makes the point, he doesn't understand where the heter would come from to be able to teach him.
But he doesn't answer the question about what a ger is supposed to do on day one.
Yes, the truth is, I don't know what the answer to that question is according to Rebbe Akiva Eger. I mean, basically, the only way I can see that working practically, you know, is that basically from the guy walks out of the mikveh, you assign him a Talmud Chacham for the first week of his life. And he just
live in the rabbi's house,
right? And basically, you know, you just he's with him 24/7 for the first week of his new, and he just, you know, does it all. You know, he picks up his first. He comes out of the mikveh, says, "Boy, I'm hungry. I want to get an apple." Okay, very good. There's a thing called brachas. Repeat after me: Baruch, Baruch, Ator, Ator. Right? And he does that for the first, I don't know, I mean, maybe it's more than a week. I mean, just to get him, you know, to get him really like that, it has to be an intensive, what do they call it, you know, an immersion kind of program. Otherwise, I don't know how it would have worked practically speaking.
He's a guy before, now he's a Jew, but he knows as much as a guy.
Right, so I mean, you basically have to mamish hold him by the hand. What's that? Yeah, I mean, you
hold him under the water until they purchase all the necessary.
Tell him to tread water. Right, yeah. Come up in a few minutes. Right, so I don't know how that is supposed to work practically, and again, to the best of my knowledge, bizman hazeh, nobody does that, because, I mean, it would be a churban. I mean, can you imagine? You know, I mean,
but it wouldn't last.
I'm sorry?
You take someone, halacha l'maisa, take someone into your house for a month, you give them a booklet afterwards, no bacon, no BLTs, what you can eat, say your blessing before you eat, and in a book form. Mm-hmm. It's not that much. And he locked in his room for a week and he reads everything. I think I have an idea, you know, let me go out on my own.
Right. Right, I that's what you'd have to do, but you know, certainly.
Certainly. How to be a gear for idiots.
Right. Right, but I mean, right. I mean, but you could. I mean, it's going to be one crazy month, You know, I mean, it's a real real immersion. But that's Rabbi Akiva Eiger. I mean, again, it's not some achron that you never heard of, and not some, you know, shita from a thousand years ago that never... Rabbi Akiva Eiger, I mean, it's one of the Gedolei Achron.
Was he Megayer or anyone?
So I don't know how many came to him. I mean, the Shaila... Right, I mean, it's kind of a hard program. Right, but the Shaila was sent to him Lemaisa. In other words, he was asked about somebody in another town about the propriety of preparing somebody. I think the discussion was learning Siddur. You know, since I could even learn Siddur with him. You know, I mean, you know, you have to wait till after the gear in order to do that, right? So again, he was answered. It's a tshuva for Rabbi Akiva Eiger. It's not in his chidushim on Shas. I mean, it was about a real life situation, and he said, no, but you can't learn anything with him. Magid Devar
V'Liyakov. Thus, can you say that the gear on day one,
I guess, and right. It's, everything's an onus.
And he has some kind of...
like a leeway period.
Yeah.
A grace period.
Right.
I mean, maybe. I mean, because again, if he doesn't know, I mean, how much are you going to hold against him already? But I mean, there's a lot that he doesn't know.
But Rabbi Akiva understood that.
Right. Right. I mean, again, it was a practical truth, but it wasn't...
Right. So what I'm saying, you must have realized that not everyone's going to keep it.
Right. But I mean, I guess the combination of those two things, you know, a tremendous readiness to have an immersion program, and the minute you come out, you know, this is what we're going to do. And I probably an understanding that in halacha, you know, that... his lack of knowledge is considered to be an onus. I mean, what did you want from the guy? The guy, onus gadol mizeh, you know, the guy was not able to learn anything, you know, prior to his gear. Halacha l'maaseh nowadays we wouldn't do it because the very strong likelihood that the guy would turn around after a minute after the mikveh and say, wait a minute, I didn't bargain for this, and it turns out that his kabbalah's all mitzvahs is totally insincere, which gives us a whole new set of problems. I think Bizman Azed, that would be a tremendously likely possibility that would present itself, right?
But why more likely today than 200 years ago?
Well, because 200 years ago, if you were becoming Jewish, you knew that you were getting into something that was going to be a hardship. A, because being Jewish meant being frum, by definition. Whereas today, a person can tell himself that I can be Jewish and be secular. I meant to be Jewish. I was going to wear a Mogen David, you know. I mean, I wasn't going to keep Shabbos or anything like that. Plus, you know, being Jewish 200 years ago meant that you were accepting all the anti-Semitism. So again, today, officially, as a ger, you're still accepting to be part of the Jewish people with all the anti-Semitism. But anti-Semitism in New York is probably not the same thing as anti-Semitism in Posen, you know, when Rabbi Akiva Eiger was there, you know. It's you know, so in other words, it would be much harder for the ger really to be chozer lesuro, to turn his back on everything the minute he walked out of the mikveh. Whereas in America today, if he comes out and doesn't know anything about Shabbos, and they tell him, by the way, you know, this is 24-hour period every week, 25-hour period every week, where you can't turn on lights, use electricity, drive, use the computer, the BlackBerry, or anything like that, you know, he's going to say, whoa, you know, you didn't tell me about that. And it's very, very shaykh that he's going to turn around and walk away from the whole thing. I mean, I think that's not a crazy hashara that might happen. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, that brings the teaching Torah to a non-Jew, the outside portion, to an end. What I want to do next week, Be'ez Hashem, we'll go back into the Gemara itself on Gimel Amud Aleph and continue. I want to just mention, I said next week, there's a community chasana Be'ez Hashem next Wednesday night from. Next Wednesday night, so I'll be in attendance with that. And I think between things that are going on both Tuesday night Tuesday night. So I'm not sure if I can reschedule it for some other time next week. So Be'ez Hashem will pick up the following Wednesday, going back into the Gemara a little weiter on Gimel Amud Aleph. If you want to say a comment,